This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick, and I'm here with my friend Hilton Auhls, who's the magazine's theater critic, but he writes about culture in all its variations. And he recently talked with an influential filmmaker named Christine Vachon. Now, Hilton, Christine Vachon is not exactly a household name for everybody, but within the film industry, she's a very significant presence. So what's she done?
Christine Vachon is the founder of Killer Films, which has gone on to produce incredible works such as Poison, Todd Haynes, and Boys Don't Cry, which got Hilary Swank the first of her 12 Oscars. And and she's done Wonderstruck, which is Todd Haynes' new big, wonderful feature.
I have to tell you, I saw Boys Don't Cry years and years ago, but I still remember that story. Yes. And the surprises involved.
Oh, yeah. She was the producer, and Kimberly Pierce came to her. She was covering the trial of Brandon Tina, who was a trans person who falls in love with Chloe Sevigny and unfortunately is brutally murdered by people who can't really accept who he is. It's a heartbreaking true story, and I think every kid, high school kid, should really be required to watch it. It's an extraordinary piece of work.
Hilton, you used to go, like I did, to revival houses all— Yes. —the time in the city. Is that where you got your film education?
Completely. And one of the things that we started talking about right away is what it was like to go to the movies back in the day before videos and DVDs and links and whatnot.
I grew up in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I grew up at a time where there were, you know, there were a lot of movie theaters. For us, really, the Olympia.
Yes.
Which was, you know, on 106th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those theaters that had been a big, beautiful theater that they broke into, like, six little, you know, cine rooms.
Yeah, your, cine rooms. That's great.
You know, your feet stuck to the floor.
Yes.
You could hear the other movie.
Yes.
You know, so you'd be watching, like, a quiet romantic comedy or something. And you'd— Yep. —hear the guns from the war
guns
movie.
Of Navarone. Yeah.
And we just went there every single week and— Wow. —watched whatever they were showing. It was a dollar. It was— remember,
was it a family event?
But you remember the days? No, we went by ourselves. Because this was the days where 10-year-olds roamed—
That's right.
—the streets.
That's right.
We would—
right.
—go see whatever was there. And I remember if we liked something, we'd just keep going back—
Wow.
—until it was gone.
Wow.
You know, since we couldn't put the DVD back in the player—
Yes.
—we would just go see the movie again. But it was just like the kids in the neighborhood.
Yes.
It was what we did.
What, in terms of growing up and thinking, I want to do X thing one day, were you always intent on being a filmmaker?
No, but I mean, I throw this back at you a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, we're about the same age.
Yes.
And you also grew up in New York.
Yes.
So when I came back to New York after college—
Mm-hmm.
—in the early, mid-80s,
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like everybody was just sort of like, I want to be an artist.
Yes.
And it was very fluid.
Yes.
Like, you kind of just wanted to be in the world.
Yes.
And people were doing film and art and music and fashion. Food wasn't such a big thing—
No.
—yet. Like, if it was now, they'd be like, and food.
Yeah, exactly.
But then it was just like, food is what you ate.
Exactly. You go to Dojo's.
Exactly.
Right, right.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes. Yes.
Tofu burger—
exactly.
—at Dojo's.
Right.
But so it kind of took a while to figure out that film was kind of the most interesting thing to me.
Were you always intent on producing for others?
You know, I had fun making my own films,
mm-hmm.
but ultimately I felt like it just wasn't— I don't know. I didn't feel I guess at a certain point, I didn't feel that same sense of urgency about directing that I did about producing. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard thing to explain to people because everyone thinks that you're a producer because you couldn't direct,
right?
You know, or you weren't good enough to direct, or, you know, it's hard to explain it as a choice.
Yes.
And I really did decide, like, producing is so much more about, I don't know, about having the whole picture in mind, about not that a director has to have that laser focus on the frame. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think I was well suited for that.
That's interesting. And I'm wondering about your directives in terms of moving into underground, let's say underground features. Mm-hmm. What was the directive for you in terms of working with someone? Was it that you would really suss out their personality? What was the thing that compelled you to keep going?
You know, in those years, it was really the scripts, the projects themselves, like Kids, for example.
Yes. Yeah. I remember seeing Kids and being blown away by it. It was the photographer Larry Clark's first film, I believe.
That's right.
And it was really about kids in Manhattan.
Yo, Telly, Jenny says what's up.
Yo, Jenny who?
You know Jenny, man.
That pretty girl you last summer.
Oh, man. I haven't seen her in forever. What's she up to?
You know, walking that balance of having, like, a, you know, it was a professional team.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a portion of the kids, not all of them, but a portion of them who really did live on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And then a whole bunch of other kids who, you know, whose parents took them to the set every day or, you know, called if they weren't home on time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So so that was that, balancing that, making sure that, that you know, the chaos that Larry sometimes wanted to film was not the chaos that we actually had on set.
Right.
One of the hardest things about Kids in some ways was when we stopped, when we finished shooting, was those kids, they just were like, you know, they were so desperate. Like, they had that structure of coming to the set every day.
And connecting.
And that was, I mean, some of them came to the production office for weeks afterwards.
Wow.
Just to have some place to hang out.
Well, girl, you tested negative for all sexually transmitted diseases and infections.
Yes.
You're clean.
God, I can't tell you how nervous I was. I didn't even sleep last night.
But now you have to be careful, Ruby, okay? I want you to take these pamphlets home and I want you to read them. And Ruby, read them. Jenny, you've tested positive for the HIV virus.
What?
The test isn't 100% accurate. You should...
I tested positive?
I'm sorry.
I only had sex with Telly.
One of the things that I love about your work so much is that the film always bleeds into life with your projects.
That's
and
right.
Life bleeds into the film. I mean, you're one of the first producers to ever deal with the devastation of AIDS in a real and constructive way. Were filmmakers then understanding, after you had done these projects, that you were someone that could really hear the politics in the script?
I think so. I mean, I guess, you know, when I think about what did we do right after that, we did I Shot Andy Warhol, still one of my favorites.
Yes.
And then, of course, Boys Don't Cry, which we didn't do for years afterwards.
Yes.
But Kim walked that script into our office while we were making I Shot Andy Warhol.
Yes.
And then it took, I think, another 7 years to actually get it made.
I remember you telling me that it was about a 6 to 7 year project. What, again, this idea of you, I don't want to make you sort of uncomfortable with this, you saw it before other people saw it stuff, but the transgender issue, clearly at the heart of Boys Don't Cry, is so profound.
I hate it.
Brandon, what's going on?
You want the truth, don't you? It sounds a lot more complicated than it is. Do you have any water? Because my voice is dry. I'm a hermaphrodite.
What?
Come here. person who has both girl and boy parts. Brandon's real name's Tina Brandon. Oh, see, Brandon's not quite a he. Brandon's more like a shut up.
It's your business. Look, I don't care if you're half monkey or half ape. I'm getting you out of here.
What was it that was stymieing you? I've read from Larry McMurtry, you know, the gay cowboy movie took forever.
Right.
Was it a similar thing of difference in this context of narrative film that still wasn't being accepted?
I mean, I think part of it was it did take that long. Well, first of all, when Kim first came to us with it, the killers hadn't even gone on trial yet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And so it was kind of early days in the whole. She was fascinated by the story. And I think she'd been to Nebraska, but maybe only once.
Mm-hmm.
In the course, and she'd written a fictionalized version. Mm-hmm. Nobody was named Brandon or Lana, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
In the course of the next few years, she went to Nebraska and actually sat in on the trials, so got so much more texture and understanding of who these guys were. Because I think her portrayal of them in the film is so nuanced, and obviously what they did was horrific, but they don't come across just as ordinary villains.
That's right.
And then she got the sort of I don't know, I want to say courage, but that sounds a little trite. She got like the confidence. That's really what I mean. The confidence to say, you know what, this is the Brandon Tina story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't have to name him something else.
Mm-hmm.
This is about him.
Mm-hmm.
So then it became much more like, this is a story based on these true events.
What is this idea? I remember reading about queer cinema, and it's something that has always kind of amused me because I was like, well, we're all queer because the movies that Christine was making was about the world. But what was the ghettoization verbally of what you were doing? What was that about?
Well, I think, so, you know, I guess in 1991 or 1992, mm-hmm. Ruby Rich did a panel at Sundance called The New Queer Cinema. And I wasn't on the panel. In fact, I was a little irritated that I wasn't on the panel. And that sort of coined the term, which immediately, the minute that term was coined, everybody was like, I don't want to call myself that.
Right.
But I think now when we look back on it, and I feel like there's a kind of a new nostalgia for those days, especially amongst young queers who bring it up to me whenever I go and speak at colleges.
Mm-hmm.
But what I feel is always missing is that sense of urgency that the AIDS crisis brought.
Yes.
And that people need to get that, you know, it wasn't this sudden like, oh, we're here, we're queer, we're going to make movies.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, if we don't tell our stories, we're going to die.
That's
and nobody's going to hear them.
That's right.
And that was a very different kind of that in a way I feel like the term new queer cinema has been stripped of that barb,
yes.
Which I think is kind of the most critical part of it.
I agree with you that energy is now, or not, wasn't replaced, but became wider.
Right.
Because of your work. So then there was Rose Trochet.
Right.
And a number of other women filmmakers, Mary Harron, who felt that because there was a queer cinema, there could be a womanist cinema,
right.
too.
That's right.
And so let's talk about those ladies for a minute and how. What were the other set of difficulties or problems that, in terms of selling a woman director and story?
Well, you know, it's funny. I considered myself an old hand at Sundance by the time I brought, you know, Go Fish there,
yes.
Which I think means I'd been there like three times. But, you know, I was like, I know how this works.
Yes.
I get this.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that really surprised me when we took Go Fish, it did remarkably well. It was bought by the Samuel Goldwyn Company.
Mm-hmm.
The audiences loved it. And it was there the same year as Clerks.
Okay. The Kevin Smith film.
The Kevin Smith film.
Mm-hmm.
And which was also received well, was also sold to a company, was sold to Miramax. And then, of course, you know, Kevin was sort of immediately taken up into bigger budget filmmaking. And Rose really had to struggle. Like, her, the sort of, like, the heroic young filmmaker coming out of Sundance worked if they were men.
Yes.
But if they were women, people didn't really know what to do with them. You know, Sundance itself, you know, scratches its head and says, why do these guys, the guy and the girl come at the same time, both have extraordinary movies that the critics love, that get, you know, get great deals, and then the guys are shooting stars, and the girls are like crickets.
Right. Your story is so extraordinary in a number of levels, one being, of course, that you kept getting the movies made. And how was it with the suits with you, you know, when you would walk into that room? And we have to, I think we'll probably get to some version of Weinstein later, because I remember watching you with him, and you would just, you were so calm and you were so focused on getting your project made that no matter how insane he was behaving,
right,
you were just like looking him in the eye the way one must with a crazy person.
Right, right.
And you just, I watched you for years just with these guys, and we don't even have to have a name for them. They had to listen to you because you would just stand your ground.
You know, it was tough, and it still is tough. I feel like I still get mansplained constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to, like, take a deep breath, mm-hmm, and means to an end. You know, I say that all the time. You know, he's just a means to an end. Mm-hmm. Like, we're gonna get this done. We're gonna find our point of connection, mm-hmm, and we will figure it out.
Christine Vachon, the head of Killer Films, talking with The New Yorker's Hilton Alls. Vachon is the producer of around 100 movies, including Wonderstruck, directed by Todd Haynes, which is out right now.